This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
When I traveled through India in 1979, there were hardly any air conditioners. Now, in this warmer world, millions of people have moved from rural villages to cities. Little room air conditioners sprout like mushrooms from every wall in the cities. And according to a new report, that is just the start in China, India, and all over the world as humans try to cool themselves off on a hotter planet. The Rocky Mountain Institute warns room air conditioners alone could warm Earth by half a degree by the year 2100 on our current path. Unless we can find a better way, that AC is half a degree over the edge into climate disaster, in my opinion. So billionaire entrepreneur Richard Branson is offering $3 million to find better AC technology. To explore this climate threat you probably haven't heard about, we have Ian Campbell on the line. Ian is a senior fellow at the Rocky Mountain Institute and lead author of their report, Solving the Global Cooling Challenge. From Colorado, Ian Campbell, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Yeah, thank you, Alex. Happy to be speaking to you.
Ian, can we start with a snapshot? Why should we worry about a billion people installing room air conditioners, or RACs, as you call them?
It's really to do with the climate impact associated with air conditioners, and it's actually way beyond a billion. When you look at number of air conditioning units we have in operation around the world today, it's around 1.2 billion, and with the trajectory that we're on, and, you know, this is being driven by a combination of population growth, urbanization, rising income levels in developing countries, it's expected we're going to have 4.5 billion. So that's going to be like 3.3 billion more air conditioners in operation, and that has multiple impacts. It certainly has impacts on electricity systems. It has impacts on consumers' pockets because most consumers, when they buy an air conditioner, have little idea as to how much it's going to cost to operate. And they also have impact on our climate.
You just returned from India, where the Minister of Science and Technology wrote the foreword to your report. When it comes to AC, what do you see on the streets of Mumbai or Delhi, and why is the Indian government so concerned?
You know, we've been speaking to people really around the world about this. We've been researching the space for the last year and a half. And the Indian government was actually the government that seemed to be most aware of what was happening, and which is actually incredible foresight, because when they look in the rearview mirror, they don't see the extent of penetration of cooling within their country that we would see here in the U.S. So in India, there's probably only about 30 million air conditioning units installed, but the expectation is, with a population of 1.1 billion people living in basically hot, humid climate zone, that's going to grow to, when we get to 2050, a billion. And that level, the electricity needed in India to power that many room air conditioners is larger than their existing grid capacity today for all end uses.
So there have been several reports and projections on the future of room air conditioners, and the latest comes from the International Energy Agency, or the IEA. It's called The Future of Cooling. Can you give us just a couple of hints of what they found?
It was very similar, and we did our own research and came to some of the same conclusions in relation to impact. So there's been, really over the last 18 months, there's been a growing awareness of the impact of cooling, and there's a really strong body of work out there. What we wanted to do was to take that a step further and go beyond talking about the issue and the challenge, but start looking at, well, how do we solve for this? I mean, one of the things we looked at was, you know, there's a lot of perspective out there that says, well, you know, we're going to be transitioning our grid infrastructure to be basically renewable energy generation. And, you know, if we do that fuel switch to renewables, that solves the challenge of the growing air conditioning demand. And it actually doesn't. And it would be a huge amount of infrastructure that would have to be put in place to power what is relatively inefficient equipment today, about 2,000 gigawatts of generating capacity. And globally last year, there was only 94 gigawatts of solar generation that came online. So the air conditioning demand actually dwarfs what the amount of renewable currently being deployed is.
Yeah, that's a strange thought that as we add more solar and wind, and we're all cheering for that, we're losing at least that by the number of new air conditioners that are quite inefficient being sold around the world.
Yeah, one of the staggering statistics, and we kind of stumbled across this, was that 2017 was a record year for solar deployment around the world, and there was 94 gigawatts installed. That was more than all new fossil fuel generation capacity that came online. But just in 2017, the incremental demand associated with new air conditioners coming into the market was actually over 100 gigawatts. So all the solar capacity that was deployed, a record year in 2017, wasn't enough to just power that 1 year's worth of air conditioning sales.
So we break down the climate impact of air conditioning into two main factors, and I'm guessing that the first is the power burned, as we've been discussing, and that could come from coal power plants in places like China, India, or Arizona. So that's the main concern, is it, the power being burned?
Yes, it is, and it kind of gets a little complicated because you have things like grid emissions factors coming in, but, I mean, in broad brush terms, in most developed nations that have cleaner generating capacities or resource, it's about 3/5 of the climate impact is associated with the indirect emissions coming from power generation. In most developing countries where it's predominantly coal-fired plants, it's about 4/5 of the climate impact is from the indirect emissions associated with electric use. The remaining climate impact is the impact of refrigerant release through the life cycle of the unit, and the refrigerants that we are using today are particularly harmful from a global warming perspective.
Yes, I'd like to talk to you about those refrigerants more in just a minute, but first, I was surprised to read that the average room air conditioner sold in China is more efficient than what Americans buy. Now, why is that?
Yeah, so that kind of gets into different technologies in different markets, and I would assume that that comparison would be looking at the typical units that are sold in China, which is something called mini splits, which is really not a lot different to what we'd look at as a room air conditioner, but with the condenser and evaporator separated by a refrigerant line. You know, so it's a fairly contained unit, and when you compare that to a forced air unit, then the natural efficiencies associated with that additional step of actually fully conditioning the air is going to make it somewhat less efficient. But one of the things that also I think we see in these mini-split units is the utilization of inverter technology on the compressor, so they tend to perform very well at part load, and I think there's been less of a focus here in the U.S. on part load performance, although that is increasing with the focus on SEER, a seasonal energy efficiency ratio rating system.
So late in the 1980s, the world got together with the Montreal Protocol to try and remove CFCs from refrigeration because they were damaging the ozone layer, and the industry came up with an alternative cooling chemical, but that turns out to be a global warming problem. And then we have this agreement that pretty well nobody has heard about. Do you want to talk just for a minute about what the Kigali Amendment to the Montreal Protocol is and why that matters?
Yeah, so the Montreal Protocol, I think, was generally viewed as being incredibly successful in relation to the phase-out of ozone-depleting refrigerants, and was really, I think, leveraged as a vehicle that had worked to seek agreement from effectively 197 nations to phase out HFC refrigerants, which, as you say, are those that have the high global warming potential. And it was one of those, I think, largely unintended consequences of we move from a refrigerant, a synthetic refrigerant that has ozone depleting potential, And then we jump on refrigerants that, as it turns out, have very high global warming potential. And the Kigali Amendment was actually agreed back end of 2016 and set a timeline for phase out of these HFC refrigerants, which are the ones that have very high global warming impact when released to the atmosphere, such that by 2040 we would be about an 80% reduction from where we are today. So it's a fairly extensive timeline for phase out, but part of that is to ensure that countries, industries have an sufficient time to be able to truly mobilize, because the next generation refrigerants aren't yet fully obvious to us.
Ian Campbell, you previously worked with a multi-billion dollar provider in the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning industry, so you know very well we're cooling everything from giant office towers to shopping malls to football stadiums. Why does this new report from the Rocky Mountain Institute focus almost exclusively on small room air conditioners?
Yeah, that's a great question, and one we asked ourselves a few times as we started to narrow our focus. But I guess two primary reasons. The first one is that if you want to drive impact, you have to focus, because when you dilute your focus across multiple kind of end-use requirements, you start to see that there's going to be differing solution sets that are necessary. So if you want to solve something, you have to pick the one that you want to solve. The reason that we picked the residential is it's the largest and it's the most accessible. So what I mean by that is, you know, 70% of the air conditioning systems out there today are residential, so small, basically apartment and small homes, and they're the most accessible. It's kind of the first step on to a life of air-conditioned comfort, let's say, where in many developing markets, you can take that first step and get an air conditioner to keep your room comfortable of a night when it may be 120 degrees ambient temperature outside, so that you and your family can sleep overnight. And it becomes a very highly desirable purchase, similar to a TV or a refrigerator in a family's kind of criteria of where does their available disposable income go. So for those reasons, plus also it's the segment that is perhaps the hardest to solve, because the procurement decisions being made by consumers, you know, it's very difficult to understand EER and SEER ratings and COP and all these kind of thermodynamically based rating systems. And so the procurement decision is largely made on the price of the unit and does it look nice? And is it a recognized brand? Those are probably the three main criteria. So it's the hardest to solve. So we wanted to pick the biggest, the hardest, and the most accessible to impact first.
And as you know, there's other extreme solutions out there, like geoengineering blocking out sunlight, or building more homes and businesses underground, or we could put a big dome over the city, the sci-fi writers tell us. Are any of those really worth considering? And if so, might they derail that coming wave of room air conditioners?
This is one where our belief is that the impact is so significant when we just look at residential air conditioning and we look at the risk of just that one end use being half a degree of global warming by the base year of 2100. There's so much that we need to do, it becomes an and not an or. So, you know, one of the things we identified in our report was, what if we do everything that we already know how to do? So, you know, increasing minimum energy performance standards, improved building envelopes, more stringent building codes, modifying occupier behavior or influencing occupier behavior to, you know, have wider temperature bands within buildings. And so many, many things, and it doesn't come close to abating that half a degree impact that will happen on a business as usual pathway, which was why we said, well, we believe we need to have a dramatically more efficient technology for cooling. And we also believe that, you know, based upon landscaping of what's out there, that it's also possible. So that was the path that we took, but this is an and. And, you know, one of the things that we would also believe is great is in residential new development, district systems are actually, you know, a super efficient way to be able to provide cooling to many buildings as opposed to having discrete systems or pieces of equipment on every building, especially in dense urban environments. So there's lots of solutions. We shouldn't preclude any. Our focus, though, is laser focused on the efficiency of standalone residential cooling systems, because that doesn't require behavior change. When you have it embedded within the technology, you know that efficiency will deliver.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. My guest is Ian Campbell, Senior Fellow at the Rocky Mountain Institute. We are talking about how to cool you off in a hotter world without making global warming worse. At least that's the hope. Now, I love all the facts and figures in this report, Ian, solving the global cooling challenge. It is in plain English with lots of good graphs. Anybody could read it at rmi.org, and I hope they will. But the ending's a little frustrating. You don't provide a great solution. You don't tell us what the technology is. Why not?
So we actually, in conjunction with launching the report, with the support of Mission Innovation, which is an initiative of the Clean Energy Ministerial and the Government of India, and a number of other supporters, including, as you mentioned, Sir Richard Branson, we actually launched a global cooling prize. And you know, one of the things which we did in conjunction with the report was we did a lot of landscaping to understand what we felt was possible. But when you're looking for a next generation technology, someone's described that as like looking for a needle in a haystack. But when you run a prize, the needle comes to find you. So we launched the prize in earlier this month in Delhi in India. The reason we did it in Delhi in India is it's going to be the world's largest market for air conditioning over the next 30 years. And to get industry's attention, you need to have a large market. And so we picked the largest one. And the approach that we took was not to be prescriptive about technologies, but just to define an outcome. So a line in the sand of performance for a next generation cooling technology, and then effectively let the market have at it and see what comes up that is closest to the full set of criteria that we've stated. And assuming that we have multiple and diverse technologies getting through that first stage to then effectively pick a or even a number of winners that we can work with going forward. So we didn't want to be prescriptive on technologies, and we have to be very careful now we launched on the prize to not effectively imply any technology bias, because we want to see as many diverse technologies come through as possible.
Suppose I come up with a new type of air conditioner and it doesn't use global warming gases and it requires much less energy. I win this global cooling challenge and industry starts pumping out new design AC units. But then we have the Jevons paradox, where greater efficiency leads to greater use. What stops another billion homes installing the new AC and therefore multiplying the total power use beyond your worst projections?
Yeah. So actually, we did model for that. You know, one of the things we did was we modeled for the extent of the climate impact, but also grid impact associated with the business as usual. We then said, okay, our criteria is 5 times lower climate impact, which is largely going to come from improved efficiency. In fact, it has to be at least 4 times on efficiency to be able to get 5 times less climate impact, with the remaining piece being associated with the refrigerant. And we modeled the impact of that, but said that it's likely that there will be a rebound effect where consumers are perhaps wary of how much it costs to operate the unit today. If it costs a quarter of the cost to operate it in the future because there's a super efficient technology, will they run it for more hours? And unfortunately, I think the answer to that question is yes, and we did model the impact associated with that. But a unit using four times less energy, at least four times less energy, that rebound effect, although it has an impact, is pretty modest in relation to what you've achieved because of the leapfrog in technology.
I have another small quibble with the report, and I'm sure you're aware of this. You can't include everything, but saying room AC could create an additional half a degree of warming assumes a more or less linear relationship between gigatons of carbon emitted and the warming that results. But I talk with scientists who say we don't know Earth's climate sensitivity. You know, an additional half a degree of warming from AC or Bitcoin or whatever may trigger natural responses like deforestation or deglaciation of Greenland. So that little half a degree may produce another big degree of warming. So is it a worry to rely on straight calculation of gigatons to temperature?
Yes, it is, but I'm not sure we're smart enough to do anything other than apply a linear relationship to that, which is obviously what most folks have done in this space. And it is only indicative, but one of the challenges is when we look at 2100 and we look at a cumulative gigaton of CO2 equivalent, we're looking at about just over 700 gigatons by 2100. And if we communicate that it's 700 gigatons, I'm not sure that means much to many of the people that will just see the headlines and, kind of pick up the summaries of some of the analysis and work that we've done. So we felt compelled to put that into terminology that is more readily understood, but obviously we do understand that it's far from a perfect correlation, and obviously we've assumed that perfect linear correlation, which is not reasonable, but we believe it is indicative.
Ian, from your travels and your experience in the AC industry, do you have any doubt that as the world heats up, humans will adopt air conditioning to survive?
I have no doubt. If you think of where the air conditioners, so I kind of mentioned that we got 1.2 billion air conditioners installed around the world. Most of those are in developed nations, and most developed nations sit in more temperate climates. And so we're talking of places like Europe, like North America, like Japan. But what we're going to see is by 2030, half of the world's population, which is going to be approaching 4 billion people, are going to be living within the subtropics. And these are developing nations, and there's very low levels of penetration in air conditioning. And the two factors that are going to really drive, well, I think there's three factors that really drive this. One is urbanization. The other is rising income levels, and then the third is rising temperatures. From my knowledge of the industry and the work and research that we've done, we are on an inevitable pathway of dramatic growth in cooling. And it goes beyond, I think, comfort. It's also about things like health and productivity. And, as we know, at its most extreme, it can also be about survival, especially in very dense urban environments where you have those heat island. This is a problem that's still largely in front of us. So, the positive element coming out of this analysis is it's not so much about fixing what we've already done. It's about fixing what we're about to do with the ramp up of comfort cooling around the world and the technology that is serving that.
Well, this scares me, and I'll tell you why. I worry that instead of moving away from fuels that ruin the atmosphere, we will just keep adapting to the damages. If we all move inside to so-called climate-controlled environments, we risk heading towards that dystopia that director Terry Gilliam portrayed in his 1985 movie Brazil. That made quite an impact on me, that movie. So I wonder if better technology is not really the answer to climate change, but a massive social change will be needed too.
Yeah, so I think that's a great point, Alex. And, as I kind of mentioned earlier, I think this is an and. There's a big thing that we also need to do on behavior. You have to be careful how you say that, but effectively behavior modification, which is you know, how do we influence people to manage their thermal comfort differently? And, you know, how do we get away from it just has to be, you know, as we talk about here, 72-degree condition there, and we can't tolerate anything above or below that. And how does that and why does that make sense? Certainly in many of the areas within the tropics, we're seeing people, governments effectively saying, you know, the thermal comfort, the threshold, we believe should be at 27 degrees centigrade, which is about 80 degrees Fahrenheit. And you shouldn't be cooling spaces below that. And you should dress appropriately. And air movement has an impact. And, you know, we should use fans and, you know, some of these other techniques to achieve thermal comfort and get away from, well, we're just going to have 72 degree condition there. And that's the only thing we need to do. So this is an and. I wouldn't say that having the right technology is on its own is going to solve it and we can happily go on with 72 degree condition there. I do believe that we have to do many things to ensure that our energy consumption and the mitigation of rebound effects is actually manageable.
You've just launched this challenge with RMI and Branson and your other partners. Have you seen any feelers of interest yet?
Oh, yeah. We had many at the world's largest manufacturers were at the launch event. We've already had sort of the process is that we initially ask people to register their intent to apply so we can kind of understand the cross-section of who we're going to see applications from, and then later on in the cycle, they'll deliver their technical specifications for review by the technical review committee of the prize. And, you know, we've seen registration by some of the world's largest air conditioning manufacturers, including the world's largest, that has already happened within a week of launch, and also many small innovative players that have been sitting in the shadows of the giant and very much consolidated air conditioning industry. And, you know, one of the things which I should explain is the air conditioning industry has been driven by economies of scale because especially in the residential space, because when the market is buying on lowest price, you get to win if you have lowest cost, and you get to have lowest cost if you have the greatest scale. So, you know, 70% of the world's residential air conditioners are manufactured in China, and half of that is with two companies. And so it's really tough for new technologies to get a foothold or access to the market. And that's one of the things that we're looking to do with the prize is to shine a spotlight on the market so we can see what's in the shadows. And, you know, a number of these small players with some really intriguing technologies have already started stepping out and indicating their intent to apply.
Yes, we have to remember that Apple computers came out of Steve Jobs' garage and not really out of IBM. So there may be some really inventive people out there who could use this challenge to leverage their way up and get us some better air conditioners that don't wreck the climate. We've been speaking with Ian Campbell, a senior fellow at the Rocky Mountain Institute, headquartered in Boulder, Colorado. You can find out a lot more at rmi.org. I will put links to their new report, Solving the Global Cooling Challenge, in my show blog at ecoshock.org. And thank you so much for informing us about this.
Thanks for the opportunity, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.